This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during May. This month, we'll watch for crumbs from Halley's Comet, prep for a total lunar eclipse, track down three evening planets, and take stock of bright stars in the late spring sky. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. Most of us know about Halley's Comet, but this famous object hasn't been anywhere near us since the mid-1980s. In fact, right now it's out beyond Neptune and still moving away from us. The turnaround, back toward the Sun, won't occur until late 2023. But each year about this time, planet Earth glides across Halley's orbit, and when that happens, we run into rocky grit shed by the comet centuries ago. The bits that slam into our atmosphere are tiny. Most are no more than 1/1000th of a gram. But they arrive at 66 kilometers per second. That's 148,000 miles per hour. That's a lot of kinetic energy, and it gets dissipated high in the atmosphere as brief shooting stars. Astronomers call this annual cosmic light show the Eta Aquariid meteor shower, because these crumbs from Halley's Comet appear to be plowing into us from the direction of the constellation Aquarius, and specifically near its star Eta. The good news is that when the shower peaks early on May 6th, moonlight won't be a problem at all. The bad news is that Aquarius isn't in the evening sky right now, and it's relatively far south in the sky for northern observers. So to enjoy this shower, you'll need to get up really early, say 3 a.m., to enjoy it in the couple of hours before dawn. If you're watching from a clear, super dark sky, you might spot a meteor every few minutes. Not an early riser? Well, there's still lots to see after sunset. But first, let's take stock of the Moon's cycle of phases this month. As May opens, we find the Moon in the sky before dawn, with last quarter on May 3rd. New Moon follows on May 11th, and a few days after that you'll find a thin crescent hanging over the western horizon as darkness falls. First quarter is the 19th, and full Moon on the 26th, and it's that full Moon that I'd like to spend some time with. Native American tribes knew this as the full flower moon, and for obvious reasons. This deep into northern spring, flowers are abundant everywhere. But it was also known as the full corn planting moon, or the milk moon. This particular full moon offers two noteworthy aspects. First, it occurs just 9 hours after the moon reaches the point in its orbit closest to Earth, its perigee. You might imagine that the lunar orbit is a perfect circle. And that's nearly so, but it's actually an ellipse, such that the moon is at times 5% closer than average and, half an orbit later, 5% farther away. On the 26th, it swings through perigee and, as it turns out, comes its closest to Earth during all of 2021. Tides will be especially strong that day. You're sure to hear this called a supermoon, because it will appear 7% larger and about 15% brighter than average. This term was coined in 1979 by an astrologer named Roger Knoll, and honestly, I'm not fond of it. Not because Knoll was an astrologer, but because it's not all that super. I make a living out of watching the nighttime sky, and frankly, to me, these supermoons don't look any larger than an average full moon. I think the term creates an expectation that you'll see something unusual, which just isn't the case. Okay, enough about that. The other event on May 26th is that the moon undergoes a total lunar eclipse, the first one we've had in nearly 2.5 years. The timing benefits anyone living around the Pacific Ocean. It'll take the moon about 3.5 hours to slowly glide through the umbra, the dark core of Earth's shadow. And here in North America, mid-eclipse is at 4:19 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Everyone in North America from the Rockies westward have a chance to see the moon totally eclipsed in the hours before sunrise. Those in eastern North America have to settle for glimpsing the last partial phases as the dawn sky brightens, or maybe nothing at all. You might hear this eclipse called a blood moon because the lunar disk can take on a reddish hue during totality. That's from a little bit of sunlight refracting through our atmosphere and essentially leaking around the edges of our planet and onto the moon. But my educated guess is that you won't see those dark, bloody hues this time around. That's because this isn't a particularly deep eclipse, as the entire moon just barely becomes fully engulfed in the umbral shadow. Totality lasts just 18 minutes. And if you're able to see totality, look for a distinct brightening on the northern half of the lunar disk. That's the part closest to the outside edge of the umbral shadow. Anyone hoping to see a brilliant planet in the sky after sundown will be disappointed during May. But it is possible to spot the innermost planets, Mercury and Venus, if you're up for a little challenge. Are you game? Okay, first, make sure you have a view toward the west that's completely unobstructed, right down to the horizon. Wait for an evening after about May 10th with a clear sky that's free of clouds and haze. Now, note exactly where the sun sets, and as twilight fades away 45 minutes later, look right above that spot by about the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length. You're looking for a medium bright star. That's Mercury. Lower down, almost on the horizon, look for something even brighter, and that's Venus. If you can, try this on May 12th, when a razor-thin crescent moon will be just to the left of Venus. You'll probably have trouble spotting the moon. Only 1% of its near side is lit by sunlight. But 24 hours later, on the 13th, the moon is higher up and a little more obvious, 4% illuminated, and just to the left of Mercury. Many people who watch the sky casually have never seen Mercury, both because it's never far from the sun in the sky and because it moves around so quickly. But this is a great time to look for it. Night by night, Mercury rises a little higher in the twilight glow and becomes more obvious. The culmination of this appearance comes on May 16th and 17th, when this little planet reaches what we call greatest elongation, its most distant spacing from the sun in the sky. Again, the best technique is to watch where the sun sets, and then look a fist or so above that spot 45 minutes later. Venus is climbing higher in the twilight as well, and late in the month, on the 28th, the two planets will be just a half a degree apart, but by then, Mercury will be much, much dimmer. Actually, one more planet, Mars, is in this general neighborhood, but right now it's on the far side of the sun in its orbit and a little tough to spot. Your best chance to find it comes on the 16th, when the red planet will be just a couple of degrees, the width of your thumb at arm's length, to the left of a very pretty crescent moon. This pairing will be even closer as seen from the west coast. Now, we call ourselves stargazers, right? So let's admire some of the evening's bright stars and constellations. At nightfall in early May, the western half of the sky is littered with bright stars. For example, that bright beacon just over the southwestern horizon is Sirius, the brightest star in the nighttime sky. Slide your gaze toward the right, and you'll come to Betelgeuse. Both of these stars will disappear from view before month's end. Higher up, above Sirius, is Procyon. And about five fists to its right is the bright star Capella. Between them, and higher up, are the paired stars Pollux on the left and Castor, the twin stars of Gemini. These are the last vestiges of wintertime constellations that are past their expiration dates and sinking into the western twilight. Much higher than all of these, about two-thirds of the way to overhead, is Regulus, the alpha star in the constellation Leo the Lion. Regulus sits at the bottom of a star pattern called the sickle, because it looks like the hand tool with a curved blade used for harvesting crops. Regulus is at the bottom of the handle. Or maybe you'll see it more easily if you look for a question mark facing the wrong way. It's about the size of your clenched fist. The stars of the sickle trace out the head and mane of Leo. Regulus marks the lion's heart, and its body extends off to the upper left. There's one obvious pattern that just about everyone knows, the Big Dipper. To find it, all you have to do is turn to your left from the sunset point and look up, way up. We see the Big Dipper looming over us, with its curved handle bent upward and its four-sided bowl apparently overturned, as if dumping soup into some imaginary pot. Even though it's so well known, The Big Dipper isn't truly a constellation. It's what astronomers call an asterism, which is simply any group of stars that make a pattern. The Sickle in Leo is also an asterism. The Big Dipper is part of a larger constellation called Ursa Major, the Big Bear. Right now, this woolly beast is on its back, with the stars of the Dipper's handle serving as the bear's tail, the bowl marking its back, and its head off to the left. Many constellations and asterisms are chance alignments of stars that lie at different distances from Earth. But the Big Dipper breaks this rule. 5 of its 7 stars are equally far away, about 80 light-years from Earth. The 2 exceptions are at the end of the handle and on the lip of the bowl. What's more, these 5 stars are racing information across the sky at roughly 28,000 miles per hour. As a result, the Big Dipper's shape is very gradually changing. In 100,000 years or so, its bowl will flatten out and its handle will bend sharply. I think of the Big Dipper as the Swiss Army knife of the sky because it helps me find so many other key springtime stars. For example, find the 2 stars at the left end, forming one side of the bowl. Sky watchers call these the pointer stars, and here's why. Draw an imaginary line through the pointers and follow that line downward by 3 fists. You'll come to a moderately bright star. That's Polaris, the North Star. You can use this little trick anytime you want. Just remember that those 2 stars point to Polaris. Now, are you surprised that Polaris isn't the brightest star in the sky? In fact, 45 other stars outshine it. But brightness is not the North Star's claim to fame. Instead, it lies very nearly at the point in space where a line extended out from Earth's North Pole would go. So, as Earth spins throughout the night, Polaris hardly moves. Now, go back to the pointers in the Big Dipper. Follow that line through them in the opposite direction, up through overhead, and 4 or 5 fists later you'll reach Regulus in Leo. So now you can point to Polaris and leap to Leo. But wait, there's more. Follow the curve formed by the Dipper's handle until, about 3 fists away, you reach a very bright star called Arcturus, high in the east. Arcturus is an ancient Greek star name that means watcher or guardian of the bear. So, congratulations, you now know how to arc to Arcturus. And did you know that you can even use the Big Dipper to tell time? It's really easy. To find out how, go to skyandtelescope.org and type star clock in the search box. That do-it-yourself star clock is just one of many features for beginning stargazers that you'll find at S&T's website. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, check out Sky at a Glance at our website, which offers great star and planet-gazing activities on a day-by-day basis. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find this Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating or a review. It will help others to find the show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beattie. Join me next month when we'll explore the stars found in and around the celestial Scorpion. Until then, I wish you clear skies.